time for Dishing Up Nutrition with licensed nutritionist Darlene Kvist. Each week, Darlene explains the connection between what you eat and how you feel. Stay tuned to hear practical, real-life solutions for healthier living through good nutrition. Dishing Up Nutrition is brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones. Looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. My name is Wendy Kate Stancer. I'm a registered nurse and nutritional counselor, and I want to thank all of our listeners today for listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. I know we may have many faithful followers out there, and maybe you are listening for the first time. At Nutritional Weight and Wellness, we have a huge emphasis on wellness. And that's why we fill our show with sound, therapeutic, nutritional advice that can change your life. We are here to connect the dots between your health and what you put in your mouth. Today, we are going to have a conversation about eating gluten-free and the sugar trap. That's the name of our show, Gluten-Free and the Sugar Trap. Helping us out today with our topic are my two co-hosts and dear friends, Anna Deerhawk. I'm sorry, Anna.
It's okay. It's hard.
Will you say your last name for people?
Deerhawk.
I even wrote myself phonetics down here and everything. And Mary Hauge. Anna's a teacher and nutritional counselor, and Mary is a teacher also, and she brings a special expertise to our conversation today as she has a sensitivity to gluten and eats gluten-free. So welcome to the show, Anna and Mary.
Thanks.
So where should we start?
Well, I think we should start by telling people what gluten is. Gluten is basically the protein that's in wheat, rye, and barley. And it's very difficult for a lot of us to digest. So it's icky.
Okay.
It's very inflammatory.
Well, who should stay away from eating gluten? I know I stopped eating it because of my severe gastric reflux disease. When I came to see Dar, I think it's been 8 years ago now, I had gastric reflux disease so bad that I was sleeping on 9 pillows that night. And Dar said, well, stop eating bread. So I stopped eating bread, and in 2 weeks, I had no more heartburn or gastric reflux disease. So Mary, how did you come to eating gluten-free?
Well, this is kind of a roundabout way, but for the last 23 years or so, I have had a stomach ache, and I always attributed it to a dairy intolerance. And when I became, when I was in the teaching process with Nutritional Weight and Wellness, Wendy was my mentor, and I had to read a couple books, and they talked about sensitivities of food. And I said, Wendy, what do you suppose this is my problem, not just dairy? And she said, well, I suppose you should try it, going off grain and gluten. And I felt like that would be a really hard thing to do, but it would be worth it if it made me feel better. So I decided to give it a try, and within 24 hours, I no longer had a stomach ache. And that was the first time in the past 23 years that I can remember eating and not having a stomach ache.
Now, I can't imagine going 23 years
either, man,
with a stomach ache. Now, did you go to the doctor and tell him you had a stomach ache, Mary?
What? I mean, yeah, it's funny because what happened was in my 20s, and I am now going to be 44 next month, but in my 20s, I had a lot of intestinal pain, things that just, it never went away. Everything hurt. I went in and they did all kinds of tests. I had to drink barium. They did an upper GI, a lower GI. They did a colonoscopy. They did everything that they could think of looking for ulcers, and they couldn't find anything wrong. So they called it overacid nervous stomach or gastric reflux and put me on Zantac for that. Mm-hmm. And I took the Zantac.
So all, I just want all the people out there that are on the little purple pill or Zantac or anything to,
yeah,
you know, to listen.
So they put me on Zantac, and I realized it really didn't help. So I went off of it. I don't think I was on it for more, I don't know, not even maybe 6 months. I went off of it and just decided that this must be normal to have a stomach ache, because that didn't work for me and they can't figure it out. So I had a stomach ache for all those years, and who would have ever thought? I never would have connected that it was grain that was actually my problem. And now I am so much better, I don't even want to go back. I mean, it's not even a question. Not eating bread and grain products does not even bother me anymore.
Great. Anna, wouldn't you say that we see this a lot when we counsel with clients that they've had stomach aches since, some of them can remember since they were very little.
Yep.
Always having the stomach ache. And then their mom gives them cereal and milk. Yep. This is my husband. That's what he got to eat for dinner is cereal and milk. And now we found all these years later that he actually has a gluten sensitivity.
And that was my standard breakfast. It was Special K with skim milk and a glass of orange juice. Every morning.
And you really think that that's what you want to give someone that has an upset stomach.
Right. It's healthy. Yep. It's bland. And
right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being gluten sensitive, no wonder my stomach hurt because I was feeding it nothing but gluten and sugar. So it doesn't work that way.
Okay. Well, we also know that other people should stay away from gluten. And those specifically are people with celiac disease. And that's just a gluten intolerance totally to gluten. IBS, Crohn's, which is an autoimmune disease, ulcerative colitis, and a lot of other, you know, intestinal issues. You know, obviously gastric reflux.
So I would say, wouldn't you guys agree that if you have intestinal issues, I think that should be a big question, don't you, for everybody out there that has diarrhea, chronic irritable bowel syndrome, gastric reflux disease, constipation
huge,
that they really need to question
definitely
the gluten.
Yeah, and Wendy, we know that it doesn't always you know, show up in the gut. It can also show up in the
everywhere.
Brain. Yep.
Aches and pains.
Yep, aches and pains. Autistic children a lot of times have wheat allergies, gluten allergies. So.
Yeah, and I know they're telling a lot of autistic families to eat gluten-free.
Right.
Well, we wanted to do this topic today because we know that 30% of the population is gluten-sensitive for one reason or another, and the shelves are exploding with gluten-free products. Many of these products are highly processed and loaded with sugar.
So now we have someone with compromised health eating something that's gluten-free, thinking they're doing something good for themselves. And all they're doing is really trading one harmful thing for another, gluten for sugar. Because we know that gluten is hard on your intestine, but sugar is equally as hard on your intestine and will also cause a lot of inflammation in your body. So the trade-off is really not a good one.
Right. And we know with the rapid increase in gluten sensitivity and gluten-free products, we thought as consumers, you need to know how to choose wisely with the foods you're eating.
So, Mary, what do you eat instead of bread and pasta and crackers?
Well, I've decided that breakfast foods that we think are traditional breakfast foods are really not and really don't have to be. So instead of cereal and bread for breakfast, yesterday morning I had roast and potatoes, which was actually a dinner leftover. For lunch.
Sounds good to me.
I'd do it.
It was excellent. You got to get that protein in. That's key. And for lunch, I had salmon patties and asparagus. And for dinner last night, I actually had eggs. And then for the breakfast this morning, I had scrambled eggs with some broccoli, green pepper, and some garlic. And that was all sauteed in some good olive oil. And I had a couple nice big strawberries on the side with a very large glass of water. So I find eating that way is much more satisfying. It keeps me full longer. It keeps my blood sugar balanced. And it just gets me off on the right foot during the day.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you're really not eating anything processed. You're eating vegetables and you're eating fruits.
And a lot of times my breakfast is leftovers because I get tired of having eggs every morning.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, you know, there are people in other countries that eat
Fish
and vegetables for breakfast. And so I really do make it a point of getting in my protein and my vegetables for breakfast. I think that's utmost important.
So getting back to the gluten-free foods and or all of these packaged things that are on the shelf and what they have in them, we need to look at what they're putting in there.
We do.
Don't we, Anna?
Yeah, we do, because a lot of gluten-free foods, you know, they put increased amounts of sugar in them in different forms because they don't really taste very good.
Right.
So, Mary can attest to that. So,
kind of like cardboard.
Exactly. And like a lot of those things are like rice flour, potato starch flour, which we know rice is super high in sugar, and white potatoes. But then they also put a ton of other, like excess sugar, which is, you know, in the form of high fructose corn syrup, you know, even plain corn syrup is horrible. So,
exactly. And it's expensive, isn't it, Mary?
It's very expensive.
You know, you talked about when you were going off the gluten, all you wanted was, what, a piece of bread?
I just wanted a piece of toast with peanut butter on it. And I remember thinking, how am I ever going to do this? I eat bread with every meal. And so I just thought, well, if I could just have that bread and toast, that would probably get me through until I no longer crave gluten products. And I went looking for gluten-free bread, and it was about $5 a loaf, and it looked like a brick. And so I decided to make...
Did it taste any better?
Well, I didn't buy it because I didn't want to spend $5 on a loaf of bread. It wasn't even a full-size loaf of bread. So I made my own, and it was just horrible. It was a brick, and it was only good to make toast with. And I only needed it for about 5 days until my cravings went away. And after that, I could have cared less if I had bread anymore. And
well,
that was amazing.
That's great. Well, we already have a caller, so we're going to take a call. And Jamie? Jamie?
Yes.
Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition.
Yes. Hello. Hey, I'm calling in just enjoying your conversation about the gluten sensitivity.
Well, yes.
And I am a dermatologist and wanted to just point out that we as dermatologists often see skin conditions that are related to gluten sensitive enteropathy, like you're discussing.
Okay, great.
We see itchy skin rashes that are in characteristic locations, usually on the back of the arms, the back, the buttocks, back of the legs, that have a definite association with gluten sensitivity, and we often have our patients speak with nutritionists such as your guests and remedy this by starting a gluten-free diet as well as some medications when necessary.
Well, absolutely wonderful. Well, thank you, Jamie, for pointing that out for us. And yeah, it can definitely affect our skin. And I'm so happy that you've actually made that connection for your patients, too.
Yes, absolutely. It's well-known. It's called dermatitis herpetiformis.
And, uh-huh.
Sometimes it's tough to diagnose, but it does help when there's just an awareness of gluten sensitivity in the medical world, and I'm glad you're helping to point that out.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your call.
My pleasure.
Okay, have a great
Bye-bye.
Weekend. Bye. Well, that's very interesting. Isn't that great? So lots of skin conditions, too, and it's time for us to take a break. A large-scale study of over 13,000 people found that 1 in 133 people have celiac disease in the United States. And even more alarming, researchers now speculate 29% of our population is gluten-sensitive, 3 out of 10 people. If you have questions for us today, please give us a call. We'd love you to join in on our conversation, 651-641-1071. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. I'm Wendy Kate Stancer, registered nurse, and I'm here with Anna and Mary, and we are having a conversation about gluten sensitivity. And by the looks of our call board over here, it's a very popular topic, and we have lots of questions. And before we went on break, we were talking about the fact that gluten sensitivities can show up as skin issues also, but we were also talking about your bread that was like a loaf of brick. Right,
it was like
Mary?
A brick.
And it was very expensive.
It was very expensive. $5 a loaf for just a short loaf. And making your own, you're never going to get a gluten-free bread that reminds you of
real bread.
Real bread, never.
Or a cookie that's
a cookie.
Like real. Yeah,
no,
it might look
apart,
like the real thing, but it's
right.
not. Yeah.
It's not. So if you need it in a pinch, like I did to get through my cravings for the first 5 days, it was there for me. But after that, I'm telling you, right in the garbage. It's not even worth eating
it.
Anymore.
Yeah. And our concern is that when we know when people have gluten sensitivity, that their health is already compromised. And now we're going to not add any more gluten, but we're going to dump a bunch of sugar into their bodies and their bloodstreams. And my experience, because I've tried a couple of those, I don't find, my tummy doesn't like them. It's kind of hard for it to digest that too. But we have so many callers, so let's go to our callers. We have... Debbie?
Yes.
Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. You had a question for us?
Yes, I do. I actually have been dealing with this stuff for many, many years. Found out I have a dairy allergy.
Okay.
It's turned into IBS, and I've been told, though, to start my meals with a soluble fiber like sourdough bread, French bread, rice, but I always feel that there's still something not right when I'm done with the meal.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, what are you feeling when you're done with the meal?
Oh, I get a lot of bloating, lot of just extreme fullness.
Mary, does that sound familiar?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I used to eat a meal, and the minute it would hit the intestinal tract, my stomach would start to bloat, fill with gas, and I would have intestinal pain, depending more severe or not.
Right.
What I want to tell you is rice is an okay grain. Only a half a cup is a serving, though, and brown rice is much better than white or anything that's instant. So brown or wild rice would be better, about a half a cup. And that does not have gluten in it. Gluten, remember, is the protein found in these grains, and that's what's hard to digest. So rice is okay, but the sourdough bread and the soluble fiber you should be getting out of vegetables rather than breads.
Well, I feel that I also react to the vegetables because I don't deal well with the fiber because I think my stomach has had problems for so many years that I don't know what a normal stomach is anymore.
Right. So the first thing to do, Debbie, is really, and Mary, you had already gone off, like you were eating very healthy. You were off of dairy and everything when you decided, I haven't gotten there. We need to go off of the bread also. But that's, I think, Debbie, if you just take a few days to get off that bread, you're going to notice a significant change in your digestion. But the other thing that we do is we look totally at digestive health. So I would really recommend coming to one of our classes or just even coming into the office because it's also, it's also part of healing your intestines with some good bacteria.
Okay. I do take acidophilus.
Yeah.
I do try some of the soy yogurt to get a little bit of the live cultures in there. But I know I am missing some stuff considering my diet is it's down to rice and crackers and chicken.
Yeah, you're just not getting the nutrients.
Yep. Bifido actually, Debbie, is probably one of the best probiotics to use because it actually is found in the intestinal tract and acidophilus is usually in the stomach. So you might want to.
Thank you so much for your call and I hope I hope you get through these symptoms soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Okay, let's take another call. We have Kathy on the phone. Kathy?
Oh, yes.
Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition.
Thank you so much. Along with the caller that just called, my daughter, 26, by me taking the six-week class, discovered that she might have a gluten intolerance, and her stomach pains went away. She's been doing that for the last 6 months now. Bloating is also a problem with her, and so I'm wondering if maybe there is the sugar causes bloating, possibly, if she's eating a lot of gluten-free products. She does take the Bifidobalance and the L-glutamine and the GLA. Mm-hmm. And the other question would be, is it possible that she might not be digesting, like, the Bifida and those things that are supposed to be good for you? Because she did a little experiment and decided to go off of them for a week and went to a liquid vitamin mineral. And she thinks she feels better, so two things. Could she be maybe too many carbs or too many sugar for the gluten, in the gluten-free products? She's very good about gluten-free.
How much of the gluten-free products is she eating, Kathy?
Well,
you have any idea?
We eat a lot of fresh vegetables and things like that. I've really changed her that way. But she does eat a fair amount of the crackers, the rice crackers.
Yep.
And she has been buying some popcorn, which I know isn't good, but
but
quite a bit of the crackers, no bread at all. She didn't think she could ever do that, but as a 26-year-old, she's doing it just fine.
But she's made a significant improvement, but it sounds like we still have a few issues here.
Yeah,
right?
And so just like that other caller said, almost immediately after some food, just still the bloating, but the pain has totally gone away with it. So I just wondered if she could possibly not even be digesting the Bifida and the L-glutamine, which should be good for you, or is
those things are wonderful for you, but at the same time, Kathy, you're kind of swimming upstream when you're putting a lot of sugar into your intestines.
Okay.
To actually make progress with our intestines, and they're 26 feet long, so sometimes it takes us a while.
Okay.
She really wants to cut out those processed.
Okay.
That's the first thing I would recommend. You know, and then we might be looking at a dairy sensitivity would be my other question.
Yeah, we experiment with it with that twice, two different times in the last 6 months with no dairy for 2 weeks. That doesn't seem to be It doesn't seem to be the case, but okay. So when you say the process, so even these crackers are probably
I think a few of those rice crackers are okay. I usually let my clients have,
like,
you know,
the Blue Diamond. Yeah, that's good.
Three or four of them, and not a whole lot.
Okay.
But I would just take out any of the stuff that contains the potato starch, the rice flour,
tapioca starch,
yeah, all that stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the sugar, and then see what happens.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Kathy. Okay. Thank you very much. And I do. Okay, it's time to take a break. Thanks, Ray. Before we go to break, does anyone out there suffer from asthma? A 2001 study shows us that people wheat-dependent, exercise-induced anaphylaxis reacted after eating wheat. Individuals who followed a gluten-free diet remained symptom-free. Isn't that amazing? So now we have it even connected to exercise-induced asthma.
Definitely.
So if you have questions today, give us a call at 641- Whoops. Let's do that again. 651-641.
699.
No, that's our office.
Oh, my God.
Okay, we're all going to get on the same page. 651-641-1071. I'm getting the nod from Ray, so that was right. Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. I'm Wendy Kate Stancer, a registered nurse and nutritional counselor, and I'm here with Anna and Mary, and we're having a conversation about gluten sensitivity and the sugar trap. Like when we're eating foods that are gluten-free, and many people just think they're being told by someone that you need to eat gluten-free, as many people are who have children with autism. Mm-hmm. And then they go to, I just went to Mad Woman Foods. We love Mad Woman Foods if you are looking for gluten-free products that are healthy. But Bren told me, he said that he feels that a lot of people are coming in there just to get gluten-free, and they don't know why. Mm-hmm. They're not asking the right questions. They're not looking at the right thing. And so that's why it's important that we're having this conversation today is mm-hmm. like, you know, why do we need to eat gluten-free, and what is that about, and what does gluten do? So, Anna, for a child that has autism, how is that connected to gluten?
Well, gluten a lot of times disrupts the intestinal tract, and also what happens is it kind of makes a leaky gut type of syndrome, and so that allows toxins and other types of food particles to leak out and cause different types of symptoms, allergies. It can affect autism and, people's behaviors and things like that. So it's very
amazing,
inflammatory.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And our skin, as we learned before. But gluten, how I like to explain it to people is it's like, and most of you are either as a kid or you know a kid that's made a piece of a ball out of the middle of their white bread. And it's gooey and it's sticky. You know, and mm-hmm. it does the same thing when we try to digest it.
Yep.
And it's very difficult for our stomachs and our intestines. And we also know that in children with autism, people with depression, that it can literally gum up our little neural receptors. When we're trying to, the little receptors on the cell that are trying to pick up those neurotransmitters.
Right.
So we have another call, so let's ask Kathy. You had a question for us about gluten or sugar or both?
Yes, I suffer from fibromyalgia
and
severe fatigue, and I was just wondering if there might be a connection there.
You want to take that, Anna or Mary?
Sure. Fibromyalgia is, you know, it's muscle, it's muscle pain, it's inflammation, and so what happens is, Like Wendy said, it gums up your intestinal tract, and it can create little microscopic holes because it's really abrasive to the intestinal tract. And so those things can leak out into the into the bloodstream and get lodged in muscles, okay? And that causes even more inflammation. And that's why so many people get aches and pains, and they might not even have fibromyalgia, but, you know, they're achy all over.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
I would really look at that, Kathy, that two huge connections for you would be the sugar and the gluten. And, have you tried eliminating those from your food?
No, I haven't. I never thought of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it would be a good idea.
Okay.
And so, you know, try it for a month and, see what happens.
Okay. I'll do that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much,
Kathy,
for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, we had a call that I'd like to address. She wasn't able to stay on the line, but her question was, why are we seeing so many people with gluten sensitivity? Do you guys have any ideas?
I just think that our food supply has become so quick and so fast that we want everything made quickly. We don't want to have to prepare the foods by hand anymore. And so I have even noticed that in food products, they are adding extra gluten. So not only do we have the gluten naturally occurring in those products, we are now having extra gluten in there as well. The sugar that is in our food supply depletes nutrients and minerals and actually scrubs away the good bacteria and the villi that help us digest our food. And that makes our bodies more sensitive to gluten. Getting in there and causing trouble. So we really do feel like these are some connections to why more people are showing up with it these days than used to be.
Yeah, and I think so. And I mean, we even people who have thought of like the paleo diet and things like that, we used to not, I mean, you know, in the old days, we didn't eat a lot of grain. We didn't. We really didn't. And we didn't grow it. You know, until about 200 years ago, we didn't grow grains, oats, you know, wheat, things like that. So I think that's a huge part of it. Our bodies aren't used to digesting that stuff. So,
yeah, exactly. And don't you? Well, there's a number of reasons, but it all goes back to intestinal health. And we know, again, for many people, and when we look at people with celiac disease, that gluten actually destroys those little villi in our intestines. And so not only are we eating way too many grains, but we're eating them very, very processed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we have some more callers. Oh, my gosh. Let me see. I just want to take a minute and see who's been waiting the longest. Okay, there we go. Katie?
Yeah?
Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition.
Hi. I was just wondering, if you have a problem with gluten, could it start in your mouth? I work with someone who has autism, they have a lot of mouth sores, not like a herpes sore, but like a canker sore. Mm-hmm. Would that start in your mouth, or is it only in your digestive system?
Well, once we develop the allergy, my own belief is that allergies do start in our digestive system, but then once we develop the allergy, as soon as you know, like if you eat something that you're very allergic to, your lips can immediately swell. So the mouth sores make a lot of sense, too.
So okay.
That's a great question. And thank you for working with those autistic children.
Yes. Yeah.
That's not an easy job, is it?
No, it's not. But it's worth it.
Yes, it is. It's very rewarding. Well, good for you. And thank you so much, Katie, and have a nice weekend.
You too. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks.
Great. And so let's keep right on with the call since the lines are full. Linda?
Yes, hello.
Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition.
Hi, ladies.
Hi.
I have a question. I have a daughter who is 17 now. About 7 years ago, was diagnosed with celiac disease. I myself have suffered with depression off and on for probably 10 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of any other family members that had celiac disease, but would it be a worthwhile thing for me to pursue a gluten-free diet to see if there's any correlation between the gluten and the depression symptoms?
I think that would be very worthwhile, because when we look at things that block our receptors on the cell, it's gluten, it's sugar, it's the bad trans fats, and it's like alcohol and drugs, those things. So I would Do you eat a lot of sugar?
Yeah, I do. I have to say, as it's in products and the yogurts and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure.
And she, of course, you know, abides by the gluten-free diet, but the rest of the family does not because no one else has been diagnosed with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard you mention that, and I think, well, maybe that is something that I could try.
I think that that's a really good idea. I would also look at the sugar.
Okay.
And I'd also look at, do you know what trans fats are and the harmful fats are, Linda?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so do all of those.
Okay.
And then just see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's certainly worth a try.
But yeah, absolutely. Right. I think there might be a connection. And Ray is saying it's time for a break.
Okay.
Thanks, Linda.
So thanks, Linda. So do you know someone who has type 1 diabetes? Studies have shown that 8% of people with type 1 diabetes have celiac disease. About 1 in 20 people with type 1 diabetes have celiac disease without any symptoms. If you have questions for us, give us a call at 651. I'm going to get the number right this time. 641-1071. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. I'm Wendy Kate Stancer, and I'm here with Anna and Mary, and we're having a conversation about gluten sensitivity and the sugar trap. And should we go right to call since we have a full line here? Okay.
Sure.
Judy?
Hello?
Hello, Judy. Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition.
Hi.
Did you have a question for us?
Yes, I just have the question, and you may have already addressed this because I just turned on the program recently, but you're talking about sugar and gluten.
Yes.
And I don't know what glutens are. I mean,
okay.
I know it might sound silly.
But you do know what sugar is, right?
Right.
Okay, good. So gluten actually is the protein that's found in grains, and it's found in wheat, it's found in barley, it's found in rye, and some of the ancient wheats like svelte and kamut.
Okay.
And what it's very, very difficult for our bodies to digest for a lot of people, and many people are actually sensitive to it.
So is that mostly in breads then?
Exactly.
But I have found that they also put wheat as a thickener mm-hmm. in a lot of products like chili beans. So you really do need to read the label. If it does not say that it is gluten-free and it is some sort of a bread or cracker product, it is not. Also, oats are not generally gluten-free. I mean, they are generally gluten-free, but they are cross-contaminated either by a wheat field or processed in a wheat factory. So your oats need to say that they are gluten-free yeah. in order for them to be okay for you to eat if you are gluten sensitive.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you, Judy. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, have a good weekend. Okay, we'll take another call. We have Judith.
Yes, hi.
Hi, welcome to the show, Judith.
Okay, here's my question.
Yes.
I've been going to Nutritional Weight and Wellness. I went gluten-free 6 weeks ago, and 2 weeks ago I took out all dairy. And yesterday I went and bought a beautiful cookbook written by a nurse and a nutritionist to help me make some gluten-free things on my own.
Okay.
But now I'm hearing you say that rice flour, potato starch, all those things are to be avoided, and these are the ingredients that are listed in the cookbook. So what's a person to do?
Well, that's a great question, and what the reason we're having this conversation is that those kind of foods, and you must be talking about a baking book, right?
Well, no, it has everything, and it has soups and stews and main courses and casseroles and everything under the sun. But obviously, I made a list of ingredients today. I'm on my way to the grocery store to buy some things to make some things because I'm not going to pay the prices in a gluten-free bakery. So are you saying that any bread products whatsoever, I just need to kiss them goodbye?
We're not exactly saying that. What we're saying is that you need to look at
the ingredients.
And I think we're missing a piece here, Anna. Did you give your what we're looking at, Judith, is that is the amount of sugar mm-hmm. and the amount of carbohydrates. And a little bit of rice flour or you know, the potato starch might be appropriate. But many of these, what people do is they often, instead of incorporating all, now you have been to see us, so you're incorporating the wonderful vegetables, right?
Right.
And the protein and the good healthy fats. But
yeah,
most
people, like a champ, but I'm frustrated that I just spent $24 on this cookbook, and now I'm hearing that most of the things that are recommended in the cookbook are to be avoided.
What you want to do is you want to look at the amount of sugar and the amount of carbohydrates that turns into. So for every 4 grams of carbohydrates, that turns into 1 teaspoon of sugar. So what we're saying here, Judith, is we're not contradicting anything. What we're saying is that that's a piece of balance in your nutrition. So when you're eating, and some people just sit down and eat a whole package of gluten-free cookies, that's not appropriate. That's what we're saying.
Well, right, and it's my effort to not get caught in that trap that I went and got this cookbook. And I'm sitting here, I'm literally looking at my list. And
yes.
It says sorghum flour, oat flour, I already have brown rice flour at home. You know, I have the sweetener I use is just agave nectar.
Yep.
I feel like I'm making the effort.
Yeah, well, what are you going to cook? And what are you going to cook with it?
Well, I've already made some things from the cookbook. I made a main course last night that was very good. I made a soup. But I wanted to, you know, maybe with my scrambled eggs one morning have a scone with blueberries in it.
Sure, and that's appropriate when you keep it in balance. So that would be your concentrated carbohydrate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Coconut flour is another great substitute, and it's very low in carbohydrates. And it's got a ton of fiber.
Excuse me, what did you say?
Coconut flour? I've made...
Coconut flour.
Coconut flour, yep. I've made a couple things from it just for my mom. So, and I've made crusts for, like, pies for Thanksgiving from it. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So that would be a good lower carb, you know, flour to take to use. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks for your question. So I think we can see how confusing this whole conversation can be. And that's why we need guidance. And that's why we offer our classes with a coach every week so that you can ask these kind of questions. And then we can kind of sort it out. And, you know, when we're doing the radio show, we're doing it for an audience of several people, not all the people that have been to see us and things like that. So sugar, we really want to always keep a handle on the sugar. So we'll be right back.
If you're pre-diabetic, insulin resistant, or diabetic, you know that managing your blood sugar requires careful attention to food choices and eating patterns. At times, it may even feel like a full-time job. Do cravings drive you to poor food choices to boost your blood sugar quickly? Would you like a simple, healthy eating plan? Nutritional Weight and Wellness has helped hundreds of clients successfully prevent and manage diabetes. Their clients have reported better fasting blood sugars and A1Cs, along with more energy and greater well-being. Following a balanced eating plan can also help avoid hearing and vision loss, impotence, and kidney failure that can result from high blood sugars. Nutritionists prepare individual food plans and explain what to eat and how frequently to eat to stabilize your blood sugar. Eating the right combination of foods diminishes cravings and increases metabolism, which helps with weight loss. Nutritional Weight and Wellness, 651-699-3438, or visit their website, weightandwellness.com, to learn more about classes or individual consultations. Their offices are located in both St. Paul and Wayzata.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. We want to thank everybody for listening today, and we're having a conversation. We have just a few minutes left to talk about gluten and the sugar trap and eating things that are very highly processed. Really do watch those carbohydrates. We want you to give your body a chance to heal by eating the good nutrient-dense carbohydrates full of fiber, antioxidants, vitamins, minerals, and genonutrients. Now, genonutrients are actually little enzymes that they've discovered studying food that communicate to our DNA, decreasing inflammation and increasing our metabolism, which is exactly what we want to be doing. And where do we find these foods?
We find them in fruits and vegetables.
Exactly. You just can't eat too many green leafy vegetables, can you? So we're going to try to take one more caller here. And we have Mary on the line. Mary, did you have a question for us?
I do. Hello.
Hi.
I tested negative for celiac brew, and I'm wondering what food might cause inflammation, because I still get the bloat and inflammation. Do you recommend food testing, food allergy testing?
In some cases we do, but, you know, they can be very expensive, and oftentimes it's difficult to track them down, because if you actually haven't eaten gluten for a while, the test can come up negative. And also you can be experiencing symptoms for 10 to 12 years before your blood tests or your tests come up positive.
What do you recommend for people who are negative for celiac but who do have the bloating and can't identify the food that's causing it?
Yeah, I recommend not eating gluten and seeing what happens for, a month.
Mm. A month?
Uh-huh. Does that sound like a long time?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
I'll give it a try.
Well, yeah, do that. And the other thing you might want to do, Mary, is have you taken any of our classes or anything to see the whole picture? Because, first of all, you want to get out the things that are causing us harm. And then we also want to make sure that you have healthy intestinal flora. Because if we don't have a balance down there, then we can have gas and bloating too. But initially, we recommend when people are having severe digestive issues to really take those things out. You know, maybe you can incorporate them later. We're not sure. But
the other thing I wanted to add is you don't have to be a celiac in order to be gluten intolerant.
Exactly.
That's great, Mary.
And so because you came up negative on that, I would not stop there. I would still eliminate the gluten. In my case, I have not been tested for celiac, but I know that gluten is a problem in my life, which makes me feel like I am sensitive to it and not necessarily a celiac.
That's interesting. So if you're sensitive, could that sensitivity exacerbate problems you're having with other foods? Because I know that sugar is a problem.
Yes, absolutely.
If I eat any sugar, even if it's in fruit,
right,
I get terrible bloating and inflammation.
Absolutely.
Because what gluten does is it compromises your digestive system, and so you don't digest foods very well, not just gluten foods, but other foods as well. Once I stopped eating the gluten, I now digest my foods much better. I no longer get the bloat, the gas, the intestinal pain that I lived with for such a long time. So
fantastic.
If you're one of those people that need to eat gluten-free and don't know what to do, join us for our Weight and Wellness series starting in June. Just go to our website, weightandwellness.com, or call 651-699-3438.
And remember, food is either the problem or the solution.
Thanks for your call, Mary, and have a great weekend, everyone.